Welcome to Georgia Focus. I'm John Clark on the Georgia News Network. 23andMe was a year best defined by the Georgia Partnership for Excellence in Education, doing what it does best, convening stakeholders, policymakers, nonprofit and community leaders, and corporate partners to identify ways to improve Georgia's public education system. They're going to continue that today with Georgia Partnership's Top 10 Issues to Watch in 2024. And today, our guests are Matt Smith, Director of Policy Research, and Dana Rickman, President of the Georgia Partnership.
It's good to have you guys back in.
It's great to be here.
It's good to be here. You had you last year, but I wasn't here, but
yeah,
but you were here. And we had you both in last year to do this, and I'm excited about this. Who will get this year?
You know, this is the 20th edition of our Top 10 Issues to Watch.
Wow.
And so we're really excited. And over the past 20 years, the audience for it has just exploded. And I think that it wouldn't be, you know, incorrect to say everybody. Anyone who's interested in education, but also economic development, workforce development. But our targets that we really look at, obviously our legislative leadership, our state elected leaders as they make decisions around important policy implications, but also other advocates, friends of ours, advocate friends of ours who are advocating for policies around these issues, but also just, you know, local parents, local leaders that really want to look at how do they engage in their school systems to really understand the issues in a real way and not in a way that's sort of full of hyperbole, but, you know, here are the facts and here are your options.
Right.
And so it's really written to a layperson audience to understand what's going on and how to engage and make stuff better.
Well, you know, education is so important, especially now in Georgia. It's very important, and it's important that these are issues, and we get some of these issues right every year. And so it's very important that people read it. Mom and dads, you know, they should read this too. Everybody should read this, and certainly the legislatures too. And the session is going to be going soon, and we hope someone will hear some of this.
That's our hope. That's certainly our goal.
That's it. Well, let's go right into it, because we got 10 of them to get to.
Yes.
So, first of all, indications of success. Where is Georgia today? Where are you today?
Yeah, so we've highlighted about 10 different data metrics, ranging from access to preschool all the way to post-secondary attainment. And so we have added a couple new ones to align with our new EdQuest Georgia initiative that we relaunched in August of 2023. And so they'll look a little bit different to the readers that have been looking at the publication year over year. But we're really excited about tracking progress along those different metrics as we move forward.
And what's important about the EdQuest Georgia initiative is that we wrote about it last year and we launched it. For the 2023 top 10, we wrote about it, and then we launched the initiative during 2023, and it really sets a stake in the ground of our North Star goal, that for Georgia to continue on the really robust economic development pathway that we have, we need 65% of our adult population to have a post-secondary credential.
Okay.
If we don't make that, we will not continue to grow and sustain the economic growth that we have. And so we've laid out a 10-year plan of how to get there. And so you'll see a lot of, in this current top 10, sort of those first steps of what we need to do to get to that 65%. Because currently, Matt, we're at what, 53?
It's 51%, actually.
51.
And so we kind of kick off the top 10 by saying, okay, well, then what is kind of standing in the way? What are the barriers or obstacles? And one that we identified was rhetoric and political division. And that really prevents communities from adopting meaningful solutions that kind of look at our perennial education workforce challenges in a comprehensive frame. And so really what we're trying to do is urge people to adopt a new paradigm, looking for comprehensive solutions to these challenges through civil discourse and collective action. And so we're hoping through the first issue that we can have school district leaders model that paradigm shift and kind of empower students and parents and community leaders to adopt a shared vision for public education. And so that's how we kick off the top 10 this year. And each one of the issues that follows, we're kind of thinking about how we can integrate this kind of collective action mindset.
Right. Dana, what about the building a strong foundation? What about what do you have on that?
Yeah, the second issue, Literacy, Building a Strong Foundation, issues 2 through 4 really look at the big policy agendas for the state.
Okay.
And this first one is literacy. And so for that one, we really review the current, most recent legislation required around getting school districts to implement certain literacy materials and professional development and things like that. But it's really, how do we prioritize implementing all of that, but supporting districts in doing so? There's a lot of sort of unseen consequences there that we need to make sure that we do it right.
Yeah. So the third issue is student mental health, adopting a whole community approach. I know mental health is very important these days. We're finding more mental health problems. How are you addressing it?
Yeah, so we've actually addressed this in past editions of the top 10, but in this one, in issue 3, we've kind of described how districts have used their federal pandemic relief funds over the last 3 years to administer mental health screeners and contract with mental health practitioners to conduct interventions, hire more school social workers and psychologists to deliver support to students. What's really crucial in this particular brief is that we also highlight some state Department of Education efforts to sustain and expand some of that work. And so we're really excited about the idea of expanding these behavioral health services. What's crucial, though, is figuring out what the right mixture is, the right recipe, if you will, between what a school can provide and also understanding limitations and what maybe a community health audience can actually provide as well to supplement that. And so really the key in this issue is just figuring out how school leaders can prioritize partnerships outside of the schoolhouse to really expand access to mental health services.
And the next issue, issue number 4, is access to quality child care, removing workforce barriers. How are we going to do that?
Yeah, removing workforce barriers. You know, we hear a lot right now from our employers about the skills gap, that there's way more jobs available than people to fill them. And
yes,
one of the big barriers to employment is lack of quality child care. And so we're seeing that for families with young children, especially through the pandemic and after the pandemic, that issue has gotten even harder. So there's lack of available options, the high cost of care. Right now, it's basically the same price, if not more so, to get infant toddler care than send a kid to college. Current options don't accommodate a lot of evening or overnight shift work.
Yeah.
And a lot of the growth in our economy is in shift work, overnights, weekends, even like hospitals and things like that. The expiring federal pandemic relief funds is going to be an issue, and an overall shortage of early care educators, people to teach and take care of the children. And so this issue really looks at how can we come together to really remove that barrier, allow people to get back to work while the kids are in a high-quality environment. And so it's really a twofer to address this issue.
Yeah. Matt?
Yeah, I would expand on what Dana said. I think we also, in that issue, are thinking about how we can kind of leverage already existing state-level policies and employer contributions that can make child care more affordable for parents.
Issue number 5 is career pathways, a demand-driven approach.
Yeah, so what we're uncovering in this issue is how important it is for school districts to provide career and technical options for their high school students that align with workforce needs. One thing that we uncovered is that 130,000 Georgia high school students have completed a 3-course sequence in a career and technical area in 2022, and that's a great increase over the last 10 years. But we also found that only 2 out of 5 of those students participated in a work-based learning opportunity, and that means working as an intern or working as an apprentice or something like that in a workplace. What we also found is that only about 1/3 of those students actually earned what we call a credential of value, meaning a credential that would produce some kind of livable wage for that person. And so really in this issue, we're championing the idea that districts can work with their workforce partners to adopt an approach where they provide students with greater real-world experiences and allow them to earn these credentials while they're still enrolled in high school.
Yeah, Dana, you
have- Yeah, and we're really talking about helping communities, local regions, align their education policies, like what kind of career pathways do they offer, what kind of dual enrollment or partnerships they have with their local technical colleges, in particular in the rural areas, and how do those alignments lead to sort of credentials of value. And so looking at local communities and local regions really growing and sustaining their own workforce.
Yeah. The students now are doing this workforce and they do dual enrollment.
Yeah.
And that helps them immediately. And when they're in college, I wish we'd have had that when I was in school.
Especially if the dual enrollment is aligned to something that actually gets you to, and you're not taking extra classes just to take extra classes, but really taking one that will align to a credential, or, you know, get you down the path to a degree.
Yeah.
Quicker and cheaper, and that helps everybody.
One thing we demystify in that brief is that dual enrollment is not just that first English composition class or that first college algebra class. In many cases, dual enrollment also encompasses career and technical opportunities as well.
The next issue is educator recruitment, a new paradigm for districts.
Yeah, and so I'll take this one. What we've uncovered too in issue six is that there are emerging models. We highlight three: internships, residencies, and apprenticeships that prepare individuals to enter the teaching profession. One thing that we kind of advocate for in this particular brief is the idea of remodeling preparation and recruitment experiences so that we bring in these candidates earlier in the process. They understand what's expected of them in the classroom and provide them with more robust preparation. And so the idea is that we can kind of highlight what is happening with these models while they're promising, while they're effective, and hopefully integrating those elements into our existing programs to make sure that our candidates are ready for classroom on day one.
Yeah, and this issue really gets at addressing the teacher shortage problem that we've been talking about. But again, I think it's more of a twofer because we're looking at how we recruit and train new teachers. But also the models that Matt's talking about and what we're talking about here in terms of apprenticeships and internships really help retention of teachers as well. And so we're less likely to lose teachers in their second, third, fourth, fifth year, and really looking at how do you retain and keep teachers longer. And so these are some exciting opportunities. So instead of a student, you're traditionally, you go to college, you spend your last semester in a classroom. But what happens a lot of times is once teachers get hired and really into a classroom, they're like, oh, I don't like this, and they're out of there. And so to give them the longer exposure, more residencies like doctors do, so that they're really committed and understand what they're getting into before they, you know, graduate with this teaching certificate that they might not end up using.
So they can go in and participate in it. In the last few months?
Yeah, for like a full year.
Oh, okay.
For a lot of folks in the undergrad.
Okay.
And then there's other models of internships and residencies where you're getting a master's degree.
Okay.
And you're sort of doing the work and getting your degree at the same time. And so there's some really interesting, innovative models that ultimately save the district's money and lead to better retention rates of teachers.
Right.
And so we're encouraging more investment in there.
The next issue is the superintendent struggle, supporting district leaders through unprecedented times.
Yes, and in this issue, we really dig into the local district superintendent.
Okay.
We've been doing a lot of research and working with a lot of districts through this COVID relief pandemic times.
Right.
And since 2020, we've had more than a 50% turnover in superintendents.
Really?
And that's just a huge number.
Yeah.
And I think it has so many implications for that. Long-term strategic planning, if you have a leader that's turning over every 2 years, you don't get anywhere, right?
You don't get anywhere,
And traditionally, when you get a new leader, it's usually somebody with less experience. And so that has all sorts of downstream consequences to supporting these great teachers that we're trying to retain, all sorts of things around just the importance of strong leadership in that district position. And so there are examples in Georgia of great superintendent trainings, and we have the GLISI, the Georgia Leadership Institute for School Improvement. The Georgia School Superintendents Association does great cohort training of district superintendents. Gwinnett County has a great leadership pathway, but when we're talking sort of statewide, especially the smaller districts that don't have that kind of capacity, we really need a statewide approach to lift up and support these leaders as they transition into these really difficult positions, and a position that has changed. I mean, these poor superintendents, there was not a manual in 2020 of how to navigate a pandemic.
Oh, right.
There was not a manual in, you know, to mask, pro or con. Like, there's no guidance here. And so they're dealing with the normal stuff, which was pressure already. And now all of these other sort of societal things, they need support and help. It's a rough job.
Wow. That's it. The next one is the funding cliff. I like the title of this. Moving forward after the money runs out.
Yeah. I think everybody, you know, listening to this news program, you know, is aware of all the federal dollars that have gone in, and we had sort of billions go into our K-12 system since 2020 with the intention of recovering from the pandemic and helping school systems recover. All of that money has to be expended by this September of 2024. And districts have done an amazing job of all kinds of things, of investing to make sure that students, you know, recover any lost learning time, mental health, educator supports, all the things we've been doing. But, you know, we're not recovered from the pandemic, and the money's running out. And so it's not a question of how do we maintain everything we've done, because I think it's completely, you can't replace that level of money. That just won't happen. So the question is, how do we really prioritize and understand what was really working? How do we maintain that? You know, how do we share best practices, learnings? How do we move forward with a smaller budget, but hopefully not a completely reduced budget, and really capitalize on what was working and maintain that?
Yeah. Matt, yep.
Yeah, I think one thing we highlight too with the funding cliff discussion is how important it is for state level leaders to be involved in the process of increasing district capacity too, because they can't go it alone. You can't take a 10% cut in your budget and figure out how to stem that. You have to figure out ways to identify promising practices and leverage that state capacity to help districts move along in a positive way.
Issue 9. Corporate connections, reimagining delivery of post-secondary training.
Yeah, this one is particularly exciting for us at the Georgia Partnership. You know, John, you know our work, and for years we have been working on how to get the corporate community more engaged in education and workforce development policy. And a lot of times the business leaders in the state are like, well, we don't know what to do. And there's a particular moment in time right now where what they're doing is pretty obvious, because we know a couple of things are coming together. We have the sort of the graying population, where we have an unprecedented number of people retiring.
Right.
Fewer people are coming into the workforce. They're not trained in the same way. And so companies right now are really understanding that, for better or for worse, they actually have a particular role to play other than just hiring qualified workers. And a lot of them are doing that. And so there's been a real sort of systemic change on a lot of levels of how corporations are really partnering with and collaborating with, particularly the technical colleges, but some USG systems as well, of thinking about how to deliver post-secondary instruction so that everybody gets what they need. The corporations get the people trained the way that they need to. The people in Georgia get through quicker with less debt and come out with degrees of value. And so there's been a real structural shift on how corporations and public education are coming together to deliver these services. And so we raise up some examples of different ways folks are getting the credentials that they need relatively quickly for some well-paying jobs. Kind of makes me rethink my own career choices sometimes.
Right, me too.
Like, what did I do?
And that's true, Dana. One thing that we've kind of looked at with the data is how much of an economic value there is for some of these short-term credentials, where you might spend a couple semesters in a program. It might not even be credit-bearing, where you have kind of aligned workforce opportunities, things that are really needed immediately in the workforce that produce a labor market return that might be as high or greater than a bachelor's degree. And so that's really something we're championing at the Georgia Partnership. It's not just thinking about a four-year degree as a passport to economic prosperity.
Right.
That it could be also some of these other programs that are shorter in duration.
Mm-hmm. And then number 10, 1.25 million more credentials. How do we reach the North Star? How do we reach it?
Yeah, so Dana had mentioned that our North Star, and really the North Star for the next 10 years by 2033, is to increase the number of Georgia's adults that have attained a college, or excuse me, a post-secondary credential. So we mean anything from a degree to an apprenticeship, an occupational license, a certificate, a certification. But really, at the end of the day, it's a numbers game. How do we reach that? And so when we did the math, we saw that we need about 1.25 million more of these credentials, about 125,000 per year. Roughly 51% of Georgians have earned a post-secondary credential, and so we have about 14% more to go. One thing we highlighted in our research, in our brief too, though, is that we can do it in one of two ways. We can produce more credentials, but we can also continue to maintain robust economic development policies that also bring in talented and well-credentialed individuals to the state too. And we're seeing that happening as well in terms of more talent coming into the state and moving those numbers upward.
And I think one of the important things that comes out of this issue is for Georgia not to forget about the potential talent that already lives here.
Yeah.
If you just look at the number of kids in the K-12 system, and we just get, if 100% of them coming through got a degree, that doesn't get us 1.25. There's not that many people. But there are a ton of people already living in Georgia, adults, who could, you know, and so thinking about how do we look at adult learners that currently don't have a high school credential? How do we get them back? Adult learners with some post-secondary, but haven't completed. You know, they got a couple credits, or a couple credits short. And then the adults that right now are really on the cusp, a risk of unemployment or underemployment due to all these really fast changes in automation. So a job you have today may go away tomorrow. Do you have the skills to get that next job? And so this issue really looks at sort of a collection of strategies that gets at all of those, and really thinking holistically about raising up the population that's here and be inviting to the population that we would like to attract. Yeah. And that should get us to the 1.25.
Yeah, Dana kind of touched on it. It's almost kind of like a stairway where we're kind of moving people that have no high school diploma to get a diploma or equivalency. Those that have a diploma but no college training or post-secondary training, we want to get them a credential. And those that might have a short-term credential, we're looking for them to get degrees of value. And so the idea is moving Georgians forward to that next milestone and beyond.
Well, you know, I think, you know, you've been talking about all these issues, and I think about how when I went to school, it was boring. You know, we were like, I just want to get out of school. I want to get out of school. But now it's exciting. It seems like they're really doing some exciting things in school.
It is really cool. I think, and my recommendation for anybody, even if you don't have kids in the public school system, like check out like what's going on in your public school system. Yeah. We've visited like some science labs in high schools that put college labs to shame.
Yeah.
We were out, I don't want to misname it, but there was a very prominent one. Where he was a senior in high school and had turned down full rides to big universities because they said, you know, their lab just isn't up to snuff for me. And so they had their choice of where to go. And so there's a ton of really cool stuff happening in Georgia that I don't think people know about, but it's in pockets.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think for us and what we're recommending and, you know, putting forth in this is how do we raise up really cool stuff and realign structures and state policy so that all kids in Georgia could have the opportunity to say, you know what, that lab's just not good enough for me. Because that's an isolated story, let's be honest.
Yeah.
And so this will help get us there.
Yeah. Where is the report now available? Can you go online?
Yes, it's available on our website, www.gpee.org, Georgia Partnership, gpee.org. And you can download it. You can call our office, and we'll mail you one for free. If you want more than two, you got to pay for postage. But other than that, it's free. And our excellent author here, Matt Smith, also did a great job with some one-page summaries. And so if you don't want to read the entire excellent book, you can read one-page summaries. Those are also available on our website.
Matt and Dana, I appreciate it. Appreciate you guys coming in today. Good to see you again.
Yeah, Happy New Year.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Happy New Year. That's right. Happy New Year. We know the New Year's off to a good start.
That's Matt Smith, Director of Policy and Research, and Dana Rickman, President of the Georgia Partnership for the Excellence in Education. You can find out more at gpee.org. For questions or comments about today's program, you can email me, johnclark@georgianewsnetwork.com. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you next week right here on your local radio station on Georgia Focus.